Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Science Studio program. Today, we've got a special guest. It's a nurse. We've never had a nurse on Science Studio, and yet when you think about medicine and science, the person that's closest to you when you're getting treatment usually is the nurse. It's not the doctor. It's not the surgeon. It's the nurse. She's the face of medical treatment in North America and around the world. And the curriculum to become a nurse is based upon a lot of science. So I thought it would be very good today to talk to a young lady called Pat Cascaglia. She was the Dean of Nursing at the University of Texas at El Paso up until about 12 years ago. She's in sort of semi-retirement, which means she's extremely busy writing proposals, consulting, and she knows everything about the nursing. So, Pat, welcome to Science Studio.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be back in El Paso again.
Well, we're happy to have you back here because I can remember when you were a dean, you were one of the people that, as I am told, insisted on a good science background for all of your nursing students.
Absolutely, because it is crucial. There are many aspects of knowledge and skills that are necessary in nursing, but without a strong science background, you can't proceed at all.
You heard it right there. But let's go back in your history. How did you become interested in science and nursing?
Oh, my. I was in high school and doing quite well. I was a good student, I believe. And I couldn't decide what I wanted to be. And in my day, a woman could only be a secretary, a nurse, or a teacher, or maybe go to the telephone company to work. Those were the choices I had.
You mean on the switchboards?
On the switchboards, okay. Yes, absolutely. And most of my friends did that. Most of my friends were going to the telephone company because the pay was good and the hours were good and it was considered a great place to work. But I had done very well academically, so my parents were interested in all the children going to college. They didn't go to college, but they really wanted all of us to do that. And so when I was a senior, I really didn't know what to do. I was offered a scholarship to become a teacher, but my older sister had gone to be a teacher, and I thought I didn't want to do what she did. And my mother said to me, "I think you'd make a good nurse." And I didn't know anyone who was a nurse. I knew nothing about nursing other than what I saw in the movies. And I saw nurses come in with bouquets of flowers to people and maybe stick a thermometer in their mouth, and I thought I could do that. So that was really how I became a nurse, and I only applied to one school because my mother, who was a newspaper person, thought that I should go to a highly qualified school, which in her mind was St. Vincent's Medical Center in New York City. And so I applied there and went there and was very happy. Never regretted my choice. It's been wonderful.
Tell us what the program was like then, and so you can compare it to what programs are like today.
Oh, very, very different. When we took, for example, anatomy or pathophysiology, they were just maybe a semester course. Unbelievable, actually. But the things that were most striking was the amount of clinical practice we got, because in those days, the hospitals had schools of nursing, and we paid a small tuition. However, the real cost was to the hospital, so we were seen as people who would staff floors and take care of patients along with learning. And so we put a lot of time and effort into actual clinical practice. In fact, when I finished, I felt so competent that I could go anywhere in any field and be successful as a nurse.
That isn't quite the way it is today, then.
Oh, it's science is much more difficult, much more expanded than what I took. Much of the science I took, I had to augment, really, at a later time in my bachelor's and master's program. But the students today have a much stricter curriculum than that. And it's very difficult for them to get all the clinical hours with all the required courses that they have to take, the basic courses that you must take, and then the clinical courses, which are very difficult with their own clinical experiences, like medical surgical, obstetrics, pediatrics. Each one of those has detailed knowledge, and each one requires a certain amount of clinical time in order to meet the requirements to become a nurse.
Let me think of that for a moment, because when you started, lots of clinical experience. So when you finished your first degree, mm-hmm. and that was become a Bachelor of Science in Nursing, right?
No.
Did they call it that in those days?
No, I got a professional registered nurse degree from a 3-year program to begin with. Then I went to Syracuse University and began my bachelor's degree, then transferred to the University of Buffalo, where I completed that. All that time working, I worked clinically when I was in Syracuse in a hospital. I worked on a medical surgical floor. When I went to Buffalo, I became a school nurse, and I worked in the schools and went and got my bachelor's. Wasn't easy, as many
so
students.
So the program was distinctively different. You had this three-year training at St. Vincent's.
Right.
You could have stopped there and become a professional nurse for the rest of your career.
Correct.
But then you took the bachelor's. So what was the issue there that made you continue, and why was that different from the way we do it today?
Well, when I graduated from high school, I really only knew of one academic program for nursing that gave a bachelor's, and that was all I knew about. So everyone I knew was going for a three-year program, and that was the thing to do. When I finished, I went into school nursing, and in New York State, it was required that you have 60 hours beyond your professional nursing in order to be licensed to be a school nurse teacher. So by the time I finished that, I was so close to a bachelor's degree, I just finished it up.
Okay. All right. So what did you do then when you'd finished the degree and you'd been working in hospitals? Mm-hmm. What was the next sort of step in your career?
Well, I stayed in school nursing for about 5 or 6 years. And then I always worked summers doing clinical practice, either in a psychiatric setting or in a medical surgical type setting. But one day, one summer, I met someone who was on the faculty at the University of Buffalo. She was teaching part-time with me in a practical nursing program. And she said to me one day, you know, you really should go on with your studies. And I said, I don't know that I really need that. I don't know. And she said, no, you really should. And then she came back a few days later and said, I made an appointment with you at the University of Buffalo to come in and talk to someone because you really should go to school. So I said, well, okay, I guess that would be all right. But I really didn't have the master's degree in my viewpoint. You know, I wasn't thinking about that because I had had my first baby at that time. So I was very happy doing what I was doing. So I went back, and I got a nurse traineeship, which helped with the tuition. And, you know, one course after another, I finished. I got my master's, and I thought, that's the end. I'm never going back to school
again. Well, tell me, before you carry on, what was a particular project? I mean, I don't know what a master's in nursing involves. Does it involve writing a thesis?
Absolutely.
So what was your particular thesis about?
Oh, my thesis was I did tape recordings of children. I majored in maternal child. And so I did tape recordings of children to find out how they were adjusting in their families to hospitalization. So I did all these tape recordings, and then I analyzed those. So that was what my master's thesis was on.
And what did you learn?
Oh, what I learned is it was really, really tough for these kids and their parents, and that we were not giving them enough support at that time for what they were going through. That's basically what I learned.
And this was the children coming in for major, minor surgeries?
All kinds of surgery. They were surgical patients, yeah.
Yes. And so as a result of your thesis, did you have to publish this? Did you publish this in some journal?
I tried, but it didn't get accepted.
Well, it didn't get accepted. They didn't want to hear too much
and
criticism.
And I didn't rewrite it, didn't do anything. But I was happy. It passed my committee, and I got my master's degree. So I was very happy.
That's a salutary lesson for every graduate student listening, right? Because sometimes, you know, referees, you know, they don't quite get what it is you're trying to do. Of course, that's mainly because you didn't particularly write it properly. I don't know that. But you can still have a great career after that. So,
well, it
Pat,
wasn't earth-shaking research. It really wasn't earth-shaking. It was...
No, but it's all information.
It's okay.
And in fact, nursing and the way that children are treated in hospitals has now tremendously changed. For example, I mean, right here in El Paso, we have a children's hospital. Mm-hmm. Were there children's hospitals specifically when you were in your program?
Yes, actually there was. There was a children's hospital in Buffalo that was founded in the 1800s, actually.
Oh, gosh.
And so that was great. I did have that experience, and they were very open to research by students. So we were able to do it. But as you know, master's level research isn't always the most... profound.
And
it's usually learning.
Preliminary.
It's a learning experience.
Right.
It really is.
But if you could look back on that time and look forward to today, the manner in which we treat children in hospital is...
Very, very different.
Right.
Very, very different. parents are allowed much more access to their children. There aren't strict visiting hours, you know. And of course, the procedures and treatments have improved so greatly, you know, from that time. And even the physical appearance of the hospital itself has changed.
There's pictures on the wall.
Pictures, and people wear colored uniforms, not just the white, you know. And I don't think, we try not to make it as frightening as it used to be.
Right. So after the master's and your thesis, what did you then say? No more. You just said that.
I said no more degrees, but right. I was approached to be a clinical instructor at the university. And in my early days as in my 3-year program, I always admired my clinical instructors, and I always thought someday I would like to do that. So I had a chance to do that part time, which I did do. And while I was doing that, I met some other faculty members at UB, and one of them was actually a master's prepared nurse who was thinking about going for a doctorate, which I wasn't. And she called me up one day and she said, Pat, I have just enrolled in a doctoral program, and she said, it's going to be great. And I think you should do it. Well, as I said, I had a little baby, and I said, I don't really think so. I don't think that's for me. And she said, well, you have to go because I made an appointment with the major advisor for you next week.
Your life is full of people making appointments for you.
People seem to see something in myself that I never saw for myself, or I wasn't thinking about at that time. So she said, you have to go. So I went, and I sat down with the major professor, and he said, I'll let you take 2 courses this semester, and I'm going to see how you do. So I took the 2 courses and, of course, got a couple of A's. And he said, if you do okay, maybe I'll present you to the board of review to see if you can be a doctoral student. And I thought, okay, all right, I'll take the 2 courses. So I took the 2 courses, did well. So I made the appointment to go in and see him at the end of that time. So I went in, and he said, you know, you did very well. And I said, well, what's the next step? What do I do next? Do I have to now fill out some kind of an application or something more formal than what I did? And he said, oh, no, I already presented you and you're accepted into the program. And I said, I am? And he said, oh, yes, and now let's advise you for the next semester. And so that was how I got in. And really, just seems providential. Sometimes people talk about luck or being in the right place at the right time or just having things happen. And that's kind of how my professional life went, actually.
So anyway, you studied, you got your PhD. Mm-hmm. Now, what did you study there? What was your research?
Research
for the PhD?
The title of the degree is Research and Development and Instructional Design. I developed a conceptual model that linked the field of perception, communication, and general systems theory. And general systems theory was founded in Buffalo by a professor there. So that was a big thing on that campus. And so that's what I did. I did a conceptual model that I was pleased with, and apparently my committee was pleased with.
That's great. You're listening to Science Studio. My name is Keith Pannell. I'm here with Pat Castiglia. She was the Dean of Nursing at the university until about 10 years ago, and she's telling us about her career. And we're going to get into a little bit about how nursing has changed and how now there's so many avenues for nurses to have different wonderful careers. We'll be back in one moment.
Welcome to Medical Discovery News. I'm Dr. David Niesel.
And I'm Dr. Norbert Herzog. I was a lifeguard as a teenager, and we used to tell kids that a chemical in the water would turn purple if they peed in the pool. Of course, there was no chemical, and they probably called my bluff.
Now, fast forward 5 decades, and scientists finally found a way to tell just how much urine is in a pool.
Pools are treated with chemicals such as chlorine to kill microbes that swimmers bring in. Because contrary to popular belief, urine is not sterile.
And these chemicals can interact with organic materials such as dirt, insects, and swimmers' hair and skin to form DBPs, disinfection byproducts. These byproducts are toxic, and laws regulate a minimum amount of pool water that must be replaced daily to prevent their buildup.
Here's where urine comes in. It's the biggest contributor to DBPs. Each swimmer, even Olympians, is responsible for contributing up to 1/3 cup of urine while in the pool.
Urine contains nitrogen-rich urea that reacts with chlorine to form a DBP called trichloroamine, which is responsible for that unique indoor pool smell. Urine consumes between 30 to 45% of chlorine in a pool to form DBPs.
The new urine test is now able to tell the amount of urine in an average pool. The test screens for ubiquitous artificial calorie-free sweetener called acesulfame potassium, or ACE-K. It's in many common foods, such as Jell-O, candy, and sodas, and it's excreted in the urine.
100% of the pools tested were positive for ACE-K. In pools with 110,000 gallons of water held 8 gallons of urine. This is proof positive people do pee a lot in pools, and they should stop.
We are Drs. David Niesel and Norbert Herzog at the University of Texas Medical Branch and the Frank H. Netter School of Medicine at Quinnipiac University, where biomedical discoveries shape the future of medicine. For much more and our disclaimer, go to medicaldiscoverynews.com.
Welcome back to Science Studio, Keith Pennell. Pat Castiglia, a young lady that used to be the Dean of Nursing at the University of Texas at El Paso. And Pat, we just got to the point where you were then studying for your PhD. And then what did you do? Did you have to get back to nursing?
Never left it. I became a pediatric nurse practitioner after I got my doctorate, and I worked in some clinics up in Buffalo. And when I came here, I was very, very fortunate that I was able to get some Kellogg Foundation monies to establish clinics, which some people may remember, on Fabian, San Elizario, Montana Vista. And I always practiced there one day, at least one day a week, even as a dean.
Did you come as the dean? I don't remember.
Yes, I did come as the dean. I was the associate dean for graduate education at the University of Buffalo. Then I became the associate dean for the entire program, a large nursing program. And then I was interim dean. And about that time, my family was grown. The last one was in college. And to be honest, I didn't know much about El Paso. There was a famous woman who lived here, a nurse anesthetist called Ira Gunn, whom we had brought to Buffalo to start our nurse anesthesia program. So I knew El Paso was in Texas, and I had a vague idea of where it was, but I actually thought it was closer to San Antonio than it is.
I think everybody thinks. Nobody on thinking about Texas from outside of Texas realizes how damn big it is. I mean, they know that it pushes itself forward as being big and wonderful and great, but it is enormous.
It is.
And then when I came from England, no one has got an idea of how big Texas is until you get here. And I remember when I came from England, I had no clue, right? No clue at all. You learn quickly. It's a long way from everywhere in El Paso.
You really do. And I was very...
But you came for the weather. I know it, because I live
not.
Close to Buffalo. No? Buffalo
is... I didn't even know that much about the weather. And, you know, when you live up north, you kind of get used to it. You know, you have to have winter clothes and summer clothes and bundle up when it's cold and that kind of thing. But no, I was ready for the next step from being an interim dean. I felt I had learned how to do all of this through the years I'd been, you know, ahead of programs and things. So I was looking for a deanship at that point in my career.
Okay.
I knew long before that, I think when I got my doctorate, that's when I decided that I wanted to be a dean. I think it was at that point.
But it's good that all the time you were doing that, associate dean, assistant dean, dean, when you were here, every week you'd have a day where you actually practiced.
Yes, and often it meant I had to go into the office Saturdays and work so that I could have a day in the clinic another day. But I managed to block it out in my schedule. And to this day, I still maintain my license as an RN, and I am still a pediatric nurse practitioner. And although I don't practice the way I used to, I do all the continuing education. I read the journals. I try to keep up on everything.
What's the biggest change that's happened to nursing over the period of time? There's so many new options for nurses these days.
To me, the biggest change, we always had options, and that was one of the appealing things about nursing, because you could work days or evenings or nights or weekends, and you could work in a variety of fields, medical, surgical, obstetrics, pediatrics, outpatient, inpatient, whatever, public health, whatever, you know, suited you. You could kind of pick and choose. The biggest change that I have witnessed is the greater respect for the professionalism of nursing today than was there in my time. Nurses way back didn't have such a savory reputation. Many of them were looked down on, not much more than servants, I would say, in a way, and perhaps treated that way. When a physician came in the hospital, for example, and we were at the station writing our notes, we had to get up from our chair and stand while the physician sat down and wrote his notes. I mean, that's just one example of what we had to do at that time. So I think nursing as a profession is held in higher regard today, perhaps, than a few years back. In terms of opportunities, well, as we all know, hospitalization is not nearly as long as it used to be. People would go in for 2 or 3 weeks in for a gallbladder operation, for example. Now it's done in a morning, you know, and you're out. So length of time. Now, that has great advantages for the patients, of course, because they're not exposed to other infections in the hospital. They're not away from their families. They heal better at home. Those are all wonderful, wonderful things. From a nursing standpoint, for a student, it is difficult because you cannot establish the kind of rapport, long-term rapport, and get to know your patients as well as we used to. You know, you got to really feel like they were friends in a way, even though you were their nurse. So that aspect is gone from hospital nursing, but it is not gone from nursing home care. It is not gone from public health nursing. You know, they have more time and they have a continuity of care. So when young nurses are looking today, it depends, what do they want to do? Do they want to be in, you know, in a hospital where things are moving fast and where a lot of technical skills are required? Or do they want to be in a more, I'll say, relaxed kind of an atmosphere where the patient has needs, but they can communicate them with them and build up a relationship and do a lot more individual teaching perhaps with them?
Right.
So
my wife is a nurse, graduated from your school, and you know, she worked in the surgical medical ward in the local hospital, and she'd come home exhausted. I mean, it's people think nursing is, I don't know what people think, but I know that it's physically very demanding.
It is.
All right. And also mentally sapping, because you know, you lose patients sometimes.
Yeah,
right.
But
then you see the ones that you don't. But there was a tremendous satisfaction for all of that physical exhaustion and mental exhaustion, I'd say.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of a week, then we had children, and then she became a school nurse like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I thought, oh, you must be absolutely delighted, because it's an easy role, and comparatively it was, but there was not the satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
The satisfaction of really looking after people on the surge ward was major, all right? So you'd understand that.
I do, and as I say, there is a niche for everyone. That's what's so great about nursing. There is a role for a nurse to play in so many areas, and we mentioned practice. But beyond that, of course, there's the education of nurses. We need really good faculty who not only have the knowledge but also have the skills to transmit, because all the technical aspects have changed so over the years. I mean, just the way we give infusions and things like that have changed tremendously.
That brings up a point. Do nursing faculty today maintain a day a week as nurses?
It's not required. And so I, you know, even at my time, although I have to tell you, when I was dean, I developed a model that I was very proud of for the nursing program, which was a blend of practice and teaching, so that when I reviewed their workload, I spent a lot of time on workload. I would allow them the equivalent of a 3-credit course if they would practice one day a week in one of our clinics or in the student health center. If they would practice in those areas, that would be the equivalent of a 3-credit course. So people could choose. If they wanted to do that, that was fine. If they wanted to moonlight and go out and work evening, you know, or weekend, they could do that. Many, many of them chose to have their teaching load reduced by 3 credits.
I can imagine. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. just to maintain the contact with the concept of patient, right? I mean, it's one thing to talk, and it's another to actually have to practice.
And absolutely, and many nurses have extra credentialing. They're credentialed as a nurse practitioner or a clinical nurse specialist, and those require a certain number of hours every year to put in, and it's difficult to get those hours in when you're carrying a full teaching load.
Do you think that the medical practice in America, there's still not enough professionals out there to deal with the number of people who need to get medical attention? I mean, you go to any doctor's office,
mm-hmm.
and even though I know the doctors, and he says, well, come at 3:30, it'll do it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not the way it works. I mean, there's just this line of people.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough. And so the nurse practitioner surely is one of the growth areas, I would have thought, as simply an observer and user of the medical facilities in America, more and more nurse practitioners should be out there.
Well, you know, actually, nurse practitioners, it's an old field, if to be perfectly honest. It started, I would say, the early 70s. And when I came to El Paso, I had already been exposed and worked in nurse practitioner programs. They started as continuing education programs. And I remember when the National League of Nursing came to El Paso to accredit our school, and I was in the process of moving it from a continuing education into a graduate level program. And just to show you how things changed, at that time our accrediting agency was aghast. They didn't believe it should come into a graduate program, which they later changed their mind the next year or two. And they did move into graduate programs. But in the beginning, they were all just continuing education with all this tremendous amount of work.
And why did they change their mind?
They changed their mind because changes in the changes in the field around the country. It was really strange, even after it changed and came into the graduate program. Let me give you an example. In New York State, they did not at that time, I'm talking about the late 70s, early 80s, they did not allow nurse practitioners to work. But at the same time, we were getting federal monies to prepare nurse practitioners. So we were educating them, and they couldn't go out and get a job in New York State at that time.
Oh, gosh.
So that's just one example. In fact, I was one of the people, I rode a bus a couple of years down to Albany, the state capital, to lobby to get nurse practitioner legislation passed. And we did do it. We got it passed.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And now you come, you know, to the end in a sense of a career, but you're still very active. You still maintain your license. You still do. Do you go to courses? And
I take continuing education.
Right.
Yeah, meetings. I belong to all my professional organizations. I feel even if I'm not as active as I could be, I belong to the nurse practitioner organizations, Sigma Theta Tau.
Anything that you look back on and say, I wish I'd done that and I didn't have the time, or, you know, the what you did in place was much better than what you could have done. Any regrets? Anything you missed?
No, I have no regrets. There are some more things I would have liked to have done. I was fortunate enough to be able to get the nurse practitioner program started here and the nurse midwifery program started here. And I also was dean of the College of Health Sciences, so I worked on the PTOT.
You mentioned midwifery. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem to be quite as popular in North America as one would think it should be.
Not as in England, right?
No,
with
no,
Paul the Midwife program.
Absolutely. I mean, and why is that?
I don't know why it isn't. There are always a certain number of nurses who want to do that. And it's a wonderful role. And you must be an RN first and then go into nurse midwifery. And in the United States, we had the Kentucky Nurse Service, and they required that you be 21. And a dear friend of mine was not 21 when she graduated, so she couldn't go into it. So that's just how it is. And for ages, I was 19 when I graduated from nursing, and they weren't sure I could take the licensure exam, but I could.
But those things have almost all changed, I hope.
All
There's
changed.
There's no age requirements anymore.
No.
And, Pat Castiglia, we've come to the end of our 28 allotted minutes. I'm sorry. But it's nice to hear you describe a really tremendous career and also see that you're still involved in it. Thank you so much for what you did for our campus. And thank you for being here today on Science Studio. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for asking me. I'm so happy to be here. Thank
you. Jolly good. And I'd like to thank Kimberly Garcia for putting the program together. And next week, we'll be back with another Science Studio. Bye-bye.